Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Adoption Focus. My name is Jennifer Jaworski, and I'm a social worker with Adoption Associates of Michigan. This is Adoption Associates' premier talk radio blog show. Adoption Associates was founded in 1990, and we specialize in both domestic and international adoption. We provide pregnancy and adoption services throughout all of Michigan, with offices located in Jenison, Lansing, Farmington Hills, and Saginaw. Anywhere in Michigan, you can find a connection to Adoption Associates. Adoption Associates brings knowledge, support, and understanding in adoption. Adoption is not only our specialty, but it is our passion. One of Adoption Associates' commitments is to this radio show, to help educate and support adoptive families, birth families, and the adoption community. So we are very glad that you're listening in today. If you'd like to call in during today's show, please do so by dialing 347-850-1100. Again, we'd love to hear questions or comments from our listening audience at 347-850-1100. And today I'm very excited to be speaking with Rob Pleasure. Rob, are you with us?
Yeah, Jennifer, I'm here.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to be on Adoption Focus and share your story and the story of your family. I've had the pleasure of talking with you already off air, and so I'm super excited for you to share with our audience how you have been touched by adoption and how your family kind of entered the adoption world, so to speak. Can you get us started with that?
Yeah, sure. It's an exciting story for me. My wife and I love to share it. It started, honestly, one day when we were driving home from church. We were on our way home, and we just heard a really good sermon, and it was a really good day. And my wife looked at me and said, "You know what? I think God's calling us to adopt." And I nearly drove off the road at that moment and said, "I think you need to revisit that thought." And that was really kind of the end of it for a couple of weeks, actually. She had that feeling. It never really went away, but she really didn't bring it up again. And it was probably a couple of weeks later, she brought it up again. And, you know, little unbeknownst to her, I had actually been thinking about it more and more from that day. And if anyone that knows us knows that we don't tend to mess around a whole lot when we're sure of something, when we know God's talking to us, we tend to act on it. And really, that's from that point, we really took action. We prayed about it and we started the process.
Awesome. And I like hearing you say that, because we do hear that from other couples as well, that one person is maybe more adoption minded before the other, and it just takes a little bit of time for both people to be on the same page. So that is such a neat story about the two of you coming to that decision. So what happened at that point? Where did you go or move from there?
Well, we made a couple of phone calls. One of them was to Sarah Stahl, who was a high school friend of mine and was currently working at Adoption Associates. You know, we didn't really know where we wanted to go, what country. The only thing we felt the call was really internationally. We had a couple of friends that had adopted internationally, I believe from Guatemala, a few years prior, and that was where we felt the call. And so really it was after that conversation with Sarah that really kind of confirmed what we had already been feeling, that international adoption was definitely the route we wanted to go. She had stressed that there was such a need, especially for older children, and that there were plenty of waiting kids out there just waiting for forever homes. So after looking at the different programs that Adoption Associates offered, we settled on Ethiopia.
Awesome. And you completed an adoption of, I believe, two children from Ethiopia,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yes, correct. We adopted a 4-year-old girl named Hannah and a 2-year-old boy named Solomon.
Nice. And they are now ages 10 and 8, right?
Correct, correct. So that was, yeah, that was back in 2010, sorry.
Okay. And you you and your wife had biological children already at that time, correct?
Yes, we had three biological kids. We still do. Kate is now 15, Ellie is 13, and Lucas is 11.
Okay. And that's not the end of your adoption story, because you and your wife started the process again about a year later after Ethiopia, right?
Correct, correct. You know, a funny little tidbit to our first adoption. We of course tried to put our own spin on things. We heard the call from God. We knew that this was something that we were being asked to do. And we went through the process and the home study, and we're ready to search for a toddler boy, because we had two girls, two older girls and a younger son. And so we thought, well, what a perfect little family. We'd have two boys, two girls, and they each have a buddy, and we'd go on from there. But they actually, throughout the process, there was a need for a sibling group. Sally Mao, our caseworker at the time and the director of the program, just sent out an email saying there was a sibling group of four kids that were looking for a home, and since they were having a hard time placing them, they were going to split them up, two and two. And so I looked at my wife and said, I feel like that's something that we could handle, and that's something that we should be open to. And she really didn't have a lot of kickback. Just the thought of five children, going from three to five, I think scared her a little. But we put our name on that list. And for whatever reason, we were not chosen for that sibling group. I think there were some people ahead of us. But that really opened up my heart to wanting and feeling that desire and that need to really open our home to more than one child. So that's kind of how Hannah and Solomon came into our family. They are not biologically related, but they were from the same area and the same orphanage at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So after they had been home for about a year, I really felt that calling again. And this time it was me driving the adoption, and my wife was the one that was was the one that was saying, no, I don't think that you're hearing this correctly. So it was a reversal for sure. But yeah, through that, through talks and prayer, we came to the conclusion that we were definitely being called to do this again. And this time we were so fortunate to be able to bring home our daughter, Anya.
Awesome. And she is now seven.
She is seven, yes. So she's been home for 4 years now, which is crazy to me.
You have a very busy household, I am guessing.
It's not very quiet at my house. with the two youngers, they have lots of energy, and they're all doing so well. It's so fun to watch the kids interact with each other, and just to see the different dynamic that we have. And you know, they really, it's fun for us to go on vacation and to just spend time together, because we do have such a good time together. And the kids really do get along with each other so well that it makes being together fun, noisy, busy, but fun.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So tell us a little bit about your time in country, your experience with travel for the purpose of international adoption, and the takeaway for those that are listening that, you know, might be interested themselves. What are the highs, the lows in your personal experience?
Sure, sure. So, you know, through the adoption process, it's been a few years now for me since I've been in country, but I was fortunate enough to travel four times. Back when we were going through the process, it required two trips. One trip to go meet the children, and to go to court and get approval from the Ethiopian government, and then a return trip. And at that time, it was 5 to 7 weeks to go back and get their paperwork from the embassy. you know, we were the first couple of times that we went, it was exciting. It was scary. The country was stable when we went, so we weren't afraid for our safety per se, but we were very conscious and aware of, you know, the dynamic that we were a white family adopting a brown child. And, you know, that is always there. It's still there for us today. We get a lot of, you know, we've recently moved to a different part of the country, and it's transracial families are few and far between where I live now. So we get a lot of stares, and so that was no different when we were in country. You know, there were some pretty strict rules on, you know, being outside of the confines of the hotel and the embassy for good reason, because, you know, it's hard to explain what's going on to some of the locals, but we have learned to just embrace the country. My wife has gone back since with an organization without the children, and as much as we enjoyed being there with the kids, she really enjoyed being there without them. just because she could love on the families. We sponsor children now from the country, and it's just such a huge piece of who we are. You know, half of our children are from this country, and, you know, from a place of 6 years ago, not knowing anything about the country, to really embracing their culture and some of their customs, and we actually really love their food. You know, being Dutch, we're not used to the spice, so my children can handle it better than we can, but we try to honor, you know, their culture and their history as best we can. We have lots of artifacts that we like to display, and we have literature, and we talk about what's going on there. We definitely don't try to shy away from some of the struggles that they have, and we really try to embrace it. I've tried to make injera, which is a lot more difficult than what the women there make it seem. you know, I look forward to the day when we can return with the kids and really show them, you know, where they're from, what their country has to offer, the struggles that the country has gone through, and kind of where they are today. And they all have, show a desire to go back, some more than others, but that's my wife and I talk about that a lot. When is the best time to bring them back? When is a good time? Is there ever a perfect time? And so that's some struggles that we definitely talk about. When we definitely want to bring them back, do we do it all together, separately? So those are conversations we have quite often.
Yeah, and you brought up the issue too about obviously being different skin color and the issues that surround that. And, you know, you're a conspicuous family now. People notice you. Tell us a little bit about what that has been like and how you and your wife have managed that and talked with your children about those issues of diversity.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's more of the fact that when we pull up to an establishment, a restaurant, or a church, that so many of us get out of the vehicle, or if it's the different colors of our skin. I'd be curious to see if the stares would be as much or as often if we were a smaller family. You know, those are conversations we haven't had, but it's really, you know, we talk to friends, relatives, coworkers about our story, and so many times the people will say, "Oh, you've done such a wonderful thing for these children. You know, you've really given them such opportunity." And those statements are true. But we really, you know, when my wife and I look at it and we tell these folks what they've done for us far outweighs any physical needs that I've provided for them. They've just opened our eyes to diversity. You know, we've had a chance to have conversations with people of different races and cultures that we never would have had the chance to do before, because we wouldn't have been able to understand where they were coming from. So, you know, along with that, there's a lot of there's conversations that I have with my coworkers and with friends of different races about that very thing, you know, the struggles that my kids are going to have that I can't relate to being a Caucasian male. There's just things that they're going to experience and go through that I am going to have a hard time explaining. And so, those are conversations. Those are fears that we definitely have. But I think it's important to talk through those and to find a network of people to share those concerns with, for sure.
And I know that you mentioned before that in your wife's attempts to foster a racial and ethnic identity with your children, your family did move.
Originally from Michigan, Grand Rapids area. We lived in Hudsonville for 40 years of our lives, and we just recently moved to Concord, North Carolina, which is a suburb just north of Charlotte. My kids are now in a very diverse school. In fact, my white children are the minority, and the neighborhood we live in is very, very culturally diverse. And it's been a wonderful thing. It was something that we always wanted for our kids, but we didn't want it to be close to home. We wanted it to be a move to an area of the country that was different than where we were from. And God led us to Charlotte, North Carolina, and it has been absolutely fantastic. You know, there's been struggles with the move, but from a racial and cultural standpoint, we could never have done this, I don't think, living in West Michigan. And that's not to say that area is bad by any stretch, but for us as a family and for our family dynamic, this has been a wonderful experience, and it's spurred and inspired many conversations. My wife has been substituting at the school, and there's been a lot of my children's friends who will look at her and say, "You're Solomon's mom, you're Peach, and he's brown. How is that possible?" And so it's really, she's had a lot of those conversations already because she's been at school a fair amount. And it's been good. It's been good for both sides. It's been good for my kids to hear those conversations. And I think it's been good for the other children, friends of my children, to hear those conversations. Like, this is okay. You know, this is, may not be normal to you, but it is normal to us, and this is what's become of it. So,
sure. And I know previously we were talking about your children's viewpoint and understanding about their own adoptions, and at the time of their adoptions, they were just too young to really have any cognition or understanding about what was happening. But what have the conversations been like with them now as they're a little bit older? What is their takeaway, and where are they at in terms of their own adoption story and process?
Sure. You know, some of them, I would say, you know, Hannah, for one, is the oldest of the three adopted kids. And so she definitely has memories of Ethiopia. She has memories of her life there and her time there, and you know, her memories are not good ones. She doesn't talk about it a lot. She may, you know, and now they might even be fading a little. It's hard to know if she's remembering the pictures she sees or actual memories. And the younger kids, you know, they have very few, if any, outside of the orphanage memories, but you know, they all know that they have family that live there, that love them. They have siblings. They have, you know, even in some cases, surviving parent. And we don't hide that fact that, you know, we are your real parents. That conversation has come up from some of their friends. And they even say, "No, that's my real mom. That's my real dad. But my birth mother is still alive, or my birth father is still there." And so they still have that desire to go meet them. You know, Solomon definitely wants to see his father one day. And, you know, Hannah would love to see her siblings. I mean, she has siblings that are not living in the United States. And so we don't ever want to shut that down. We want that to be a part of their life. We actually hired a searcher to make sure that what was being reported to us was still accurate, and we wanted to make sure that their families, you know, aunts, uncles, whoever was still alive that had access to it, had access to, you know, current pictures and status reports, just to keep that line of communication open, so that if they got to that point in their lives that they wanted to go see them, that we would actually have a way to find them.
Nice. That's wonderful. So I was thinking too about, you had shared how your wife, your whole family obviously has been touched by the adoption, but your wife returned to Ethiopia twice and has continued interest in doing so there to explore the culture and meet the people and assist as she can in that country. But you also have been touched by adoption and have been led into a new realm of the adoption world. Would you like to share about that a little bit as well?
Yeah, sure. So I currently am on the board of directors, Adoption Associates, and it's been a really enlightening and just a fun time for me. I've served for just over a year now, and it's given me a new perspective on the business of adoption, because it definitely is a business. I mean, it takes money to run, and it takes funding. And it really has just given me a new perspective also on the struggles that the social workers, the in-country employees go through to really help put together forever families. And
mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed my time on the board. I look forward to serving in this capacity for a while, and hopefully trying to help the agency, which is very near and dear to our heart, continue its mission of putting together forever families.
And we are so grateful that you've taken on that role and that you are continuing the cause of adoption through your work on the board. As we approach the end of this show, I want to flashback just a minute to something that you said at the beginning when you were talking about your wife bringing up adoption for the first time and you almost driving off the road. That just stuck with me. And I'm thinking about other couples that may be in that same place that you and your wife were in at that time of first exploring it and considering it and weighing it. And, you know, is this really what we're being called to do? Is this really what we should be doing? And I'm wondering what pieces of advice or information you have from your own personal experience that you would have loved to have known yourself at that time that maybe you could pass along to those that may be listening.
Sure. You know, for those of you out there that are thinking about this and then contemplating and praying about it, you know, there's lots of literature and lots of classes out there to prepare you for it. But you know, one thing, and I don't know how much of an encouragement this is, but it will be difficult. You know, and you don't ever want to pretend that it's not going to be, because it is one of the most rewarding things that I have ever been able to experience, but it's also one of the most difficult. And
sure.
through that, it just helps you grow as a person. It's helped us grow closer to the Lord, and it's helped us grow closer as a couple. You know, it can pull you in so many different directions, but if you feel that call and you know that's what you're being called to do, don't hesitate. You know, we knew going in, you know, we're both financial people, so we did the math and we knew that it was expensive, and we knew the financial burden it could put on our family, but we never let that be a reason not to do it. We have so many people that supported us, and it just gave them an opportunity and an avenue to help us. There's generous people and generous organizations everywhere, and they're just looking for someone like you or like us to help. So you don't have to ever feel like you're by yourself or doing it alone. There's such an incredible network of families, of people that have gone through what you're looking to do, and that, you know, the relationships that we have built through adoption, I just look back and I just think there's, you know, we would have never had these relationships if it weren't for adoption.
Right. Right. I am so grateful for you sharing your story and taking the time to be with us today on our show. For those of you that are listening, that are interested in connecting with Adoption Associates or in getting some more information about our adoption programs, we would encourage you to call us at 800-677-2367, or you can visit us on the web at adoptionassociates.net. Rob, thank you very much. Your information today was exactly what we needed.
Oh, you're welcome, Jennifer. It was my pleasure.
And we are live every Tuesday at 11. And join us next week. We'll be speaking with an adoptive mother who will talk about the support she received from the agency during her adoption and how she and her husband came to a decision in terms of selecting an agency that was a good fit for them. For now, this is Jennifer on Adoption Focus. Thank you for being with us, and we hope you join us next week. Have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.